Okay, so then אני רוצה לעבור על כמה לעשות איזה סיכום פחות או יותר על איזה נושאים בתוך החיי המשפחה קשור לדרמה ואיך הדרמה כמה כיוונים אפשר להגיד לחיי משפחה שקשור לדרמה תזכורות דברים ש אזורים של עבודה או עבודה פנימי בתוך משפחה ש לעשות מפה אפילו או סריקה בזה אני בתור סבא אני קצת בלוקסוס במקום אחר אני יכול לעשות את הכל אני עושה עכשיו עוד מסלול עם ילדים קטנים אבל ממקום אחרי 30 שנה של תרגול דרמה אז אני במקום אחר גם כסבא וגם כמישהו שחי תרגול ואחד של הדימויים שאני אוהב בתפקיד הזה ואני חושב זה לא רק תפקיד סבא דווקא זה דימוי טיבטי ש להיות הורה זה קצת כמו לשבת על גבעת, כמו להיות רועה, a shepherd, שיושב על גבעה ורואים את הצאן מסתובב ואוכלים דשא. אז הוא לא צריך לעשות שם הרבה, לא צריך לעשות הרבה, הוא צריך להיות שם עם עיניים פתוחות. ואני חושב זה דימוי בשבילי, לפחות לשלב שלי, עכשיו זה דימוי שעובד. אני מרגיש שאני לא צריך להגיב מיד לכל ילד שאומר, בא לי את זה, או אני צריך את זה, או איזה בכי הראשון, או אני לא צריך להגיב. אני יכול לקחת צעד אחור, והם נהנים מזה. אני גם קצת אוהב את זה שאני לא בתוך המעגל של מיד כל דחוף וכל צריך להגיב וכל הם אוהבים שיש מישהו ששומר עליהם אבל צד קצת אחורה ושקט אבל שם לא מנתק הם יודעים שאני פה אבל אני לא מגיב כמו טק 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 מן דרך אגב אולי זה יותר קל לי לדבר באנגלית. זה בסדר? אפשר? אפשר? אוי, יופי. זה זורם הרבה יותר. Thank you. So, something steady that needs, I think, to be there as a parent. Something steady. And I'm expressing it more as a grandparent now. This sense of steadiness that the children want you in a way to be like a rock where they can come to and back and to and back and they feel you're a rock supporting them but they don't feel that you're unstable. So I feel that's important at this time in my life. It's just a comment. The primary image of the primary mythology of the Buddhist teaching is the Buddha leaving his comfort zone because of suffering. The Buddha was in his comfort zone as a palace. He was there years. He grew up there. He met suffering. It was so strong for him. It was so powerful. Meeting death, meeting pain, meeting poverty. It was such a powerful experience. And he was a prince and so on and so on in the ultimate comfort zone. This was such a strong experience for him that he left he left his family. I think we need to do this in our family every 5 minutes. What's happening in the family is every 10 minutes we're leaving our comfort zone. When a kid says I want this, or when we need to make food, or we need to respond to the next child, three children, each one wants a different thing at a different time, we do this tuck tuck tuck. We leave our comfort zone fast in and back and fast, we all the time, but it's the same process. We leave a place where we call, I feel comfortable in me, not disturbed, more quiet, and then I'm called. I have to leave it. I have to respond to somebody else. I have to respond to a need, a call, a cry, a request. Not only with children, the needy partner of ours that always needs something. For just to be noticed is a need. Just to be paid attention to is a need. So we are leaving our comfort zone every 5 minutes. And we're actually thrown out. It's like galut from the Ezor, perfect place of comfort and peace. It's every 5 minutes galut, sort of. So what is it? We can't go off to a quiet place on top of a mountain anymore. In the family, that's just not possible. Therefore, we need other kinds of directions, tools, and practices in the Dharma. And that's really what I want to talk about. I just want to make a summary of like three main directions of inner work faced with this thing that every 5 minutes we are ejected from the Garden of Eden of our inner quiet and inner peace. So the first place of spiritual work inside the family, and probably the most important one, is the very process that we are challenged as a human being, as a self, is the process where we are also liberated. The family is the biggest challenge on who am I, my boundaries, my defenses, what I want for myself, who I think I am, who I want to be. All of that is constantly challenged. We are reduced to responding, and the self is constantly being challenged, even taken to pieces. If you go out of a model of meditation and Dharma as a model that this is called inner peace, and instead you say Dharma is about challenging who am I, what this being really is, that's the basis of Dharma, not inner peace, not meditation, quiet space, not having a ninochut, a warm, friendly, easy time. It's challenging who I really am. Because if we challenge who we really are, we are bound to look through the window called me into something universal. The more, it's just a rule of spiritual life, the more we are in a way broken, the more we broken open. If we break open, the world comes in. That's much deeper and much more powerful process than quiet retreats where maybe we meet a little bit of our body pains and then we feel better. The real practice, and the Buddha said it again and again and again, is attachment to me and mine, who I think I am, who I need to be, what am I hanging on to, my needs are, and my shirion, my armor, my protection, my habit, what I feel life is about. Just break that open and something universal arrives. And there's nothing more powerful than parenting for that. And parenting is potentially one of the most powerful Dharma experiences that you could have. I'm not joking. It really is. There are many, many monks that for years and years and years and years sitting in monasteries practicing, and you don't hear of the thousands of monks sitting in monasteries practicing, and they feel stuck. And there's something there that's stuck, because they're stuck in the process of practice. They believe in the Buddhist teaching. They'd be very, very Buddhist. There's a lot of belief in what the teaching is about, but there is a stuckness. And the challenge of parenting is undoing the stuckness in us. And for example, we can get very dry sitting. We can get very protective of ourselves and what our Dharma is supposed to be, and who we are, precious spiritual practice, we can get lose perspective, we can stop being human beings and kind of become believers, we can lose a sort of a bigger view, and we can become rigid and tight, and there's many, many schools of practice which are very tight, and we can get too much into them, and all the time we miss something called the life force, and parenting can give it to us, the life force which is bigger than us, which takes us over, which is full of difficulty and disturbance and so on, but something there is really, really taking us to pieces. I met many, there are many old-time monks that have left the monastery, and they all left it because of love. You ask Christopher Akinchino, some of them that teach here.
Love.
Yeah. They left it because of love. Because they felt something dry, something a little bit squeezed, the juice was a little bit squeezed. And they left, I mean, Akinchino left after 14 years, a monk in a Theravada monastery in Europe, from love. And Christopher also, and quite a few others. Although you ask, and Jack and all the people that were in monasteries in Burma and so on, they left because of love. I mean that the love arrived in their life and it took them over and they allowed it to happen. They left the monastery because they fell in love with somebody, or they decided they want a family, or they just got taken over by power of love. So I think number one is
that considered a failure to their colleagues?
Their colleagues would consider, some of them would consider that a failure, and some of them would be jealous. I just want you to, the bottom line of what I'm saying is that we, through nature of things, we build around the self, is built from protection. That's what the self is. It's a mechanism for protection. You can even say insecurity or fear. That's what the self is. I need to watch over, to guard, to look after, that I'm all right, that I'm loved and respected, that I have money, that the body is looked after, the body doesn't die, everything, and all the things we do in our life. If you look and see the track from more or less the whole working, we'll have money, family, this working, everything's okay, that I'm this, and I'm well, and I'm in relationships, okay, and we're always protecting. And that's what the self is. And the family takes that to pieces. It challenges that. We meet pain, our pain, pain inside the family, children's pain, our partner's pain. We meet it, we share it, we take on other people's pain. That's already undoing that protection. We have differences inside the family. People are really, really close to us. They're like our body, and they're totally different. And we can't make them to believe what we believe. So it's a challenge to this protection. We can't. Yes, point at each other, it's okay. The partners here can point at each other. But we go another stage and see this as the cracking of the shell of protection. And when the shell cracks, a bigger person emerges. And this is practice in the family. It's not practice sitting in hours and hours in a meditation hall in a retreat. We can go through retreat after retreat after retreat, and we never crack as much as in a family. But it needs to pay attention to it. If we don't pay attention to it, we don't see it as a Dharma process, this thing called the family, we are going to just suffer from this no protection, feeling invaded, feeling interfered, constant disturbed, everyone around me doing arguments about what you said, about not believing the same things and not being different person, sort of under your skin, but yet you're different and coping with all that. It's just going to be a struggle, constantly. So we need this eye of Dharma to transform that from a struggle to a liberation. And that, if we regard the family as a little monastery where the where real Dharma is happening, more than in a retreat center, we can transform the. It becomes a power. As you know, every demon that we don't pay attention to, it stays a demon. Every angel that we don't pay attention to becomes a demon. Like, we need to pay attention to the angels, and this inner work is an angel for us. But we have to have that attention that this is working for us. Only it's uncomfortable. We have to make adjustments, don't it? But it's still work, inner work. And so that changes the, you know, that keeps the angels there. So that's the sort of major area. And in that, when we kind of see that as being the protection, the shield is a bit softer, actually what happens is what arises is a lot more spontaneity and joy, because we don't be busy with our protection. We're less of a self. We're just less busy with me and mine. We gave up in a way. We let it go. We cracked. Okay. But then what arises when the, if you like, the touch of the universal, when the self is open, how do we recognize the touch of something bigger that comes in? We recognize it by being more spontaneous, by spontaneity, by more joy and ease, that we're less knocked over. We're more at, there's more ease and spontaneity in our daily life. And we're less serious, maybe, more humor, more relaxation, more joy. Because there's just less me to be worried. And something bigger arises. What's the sign of a bigger life? It's joy. Joy is the sign of life. It's the default of life. Joy. I did a personal retreat just now in India for 6 weeks. I sort of locked myself in a tiny room. Anandi was nearby, she knows, in India. And we had this, and I had a visit every morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock. Ajay, the teacher, would knock on my door, come in, sit down, and we have some dialogue together. And one day, we're talking about, I would call it, standing on the edge. And how do you jump off the edge? You know, jump to a place of the unknown. How do you make the jump from the known to the unknown, from the place where you are familiar, for the place in terms of spiritual practice? And he said, the biggest tool you have, or the biggest help you have in making jumps into the unknown, is happiness. Yes. Happiness. I didn't expect him to say that.
Happiness?
Yes. He said, the biggest tool that you have to help you jump into the unknown is happiness. And I thought about it, and I remembered a quote from the Buddha, who said, joy is the primary equipment of the mind. He calls it, the translation, I don't know, from the Pali language, but he said, joy is equipment, tsiud. Tsiud for our life. It's a different perspective, but it shows that this, to be joyful, not an easy thing, but it happens by itself when the protection goes down, that I was talking about, when we're less busy with preserving boundaries and defending our boundaries and our who we think we are and what we need and what we have to do and what we believe in. So the other power in the family, I mentioned it just now, is the power of love. And I do understand the monks that left their in a way the monastery can become a bit like Buddha's castle, the comfort place of retreat, permanent retreat, you know. And can be a lack of love. And very often teachers who are wise would, after a series, you know, year or two of practice, would tell their especially in the Theravada tradition, now you spend 1 year doing metta, 1 year. Because love is such a power, and the reason love is a power is it also takes you beyond boundaries. Love has no boundary in it. It's not measurable. It's not in the thinking mind at all. So love does things to you that you don't even know that they're doing. And so love is a power to take you beyond yourself, or to take you beyond measurement. So if you're saying, you know, oh, I need this, and I have to, I've got this project, or I've got this inner work, and so on, the love can sort of take that to pieces as well. And it's just, in a way, you just lie back, or you step back. The love is beyond you. And so love is another power in the family that, if you're aware of it, can take you to places where, you know, the tears and the laughter and the love can take you to places so that if you do sit for 10 minutes in meditation, the fact that you have the love streaming through your life with children and partner and so on does things to your meditation that you couldn't do if you didn't have that. It's a power. And sometimes we forget it because family life seems to be like coping. It's modadut. And if we allow that to kind of be the dominant theme in the family, that's what the family is about, hit modadut. And we sort of forget the love because it's assumed. Muvan may love, yesh love. No, it's not. It needs to be appreciated. It needs to be seen. It needs to be... It's sometimes forgotten, so we need to stop and sort of feel this love that's streaming between, and reduce the voices of hitmodudut, coping, managing, and it allowing it to disturb you. And it's beautiful for me as a grandfather, I was saying, when I just cry sometimes, and the small grandchildren just sort of arrive with such a pure love. I hear them. They call me daddy. Okay, so daddy. I hear their voices. They come running, daddy. Big hug. And I can't. Oh, I just kind of completely melt. Oh, what do I do with this love? It's like it's so strong, and it's strong because it's pure. And so again, see that as like in the crucible, the kli, the seer of the family, so always appreciate the seeds of love as being something that disturbs us and brings us up, because it's a power. And the third area of practice, and I don't like the word practice, but maybe sometimes you need this word, is of course mindfulness. This has been the classical field of practice in the Dharma. And I do think that in the family especially, mindfulness takes on, mindfulness tumat lev or nochuchut, takes on another quality. It is not to do with quietness. It's nothing to do with being quiet. It's nothing to do with finding a sort of a space inside us. Mindfulness is a much more looking at the messages that are streaming between you and yourself and you and others. Really knowing the messages. Like all of you, you know, especially mothers, when you have a small baby, the small baby can't talk. But you mothers know what the babies are saying through looking in the eyes. Or knowing that this cry, in this, or even before the cry, what's needed before it comes to a cry, get the message. What's needed now? What's needed now? What's needed now? What's going on? What's the baby saying at this moment? So mothers have that mindfulness. So we all need that mindfulness is in the family vessel, kli or seer, as being a power to transform family life into a dharma life. It's a dynamic process. It's, as I say, not about quietness. It's sometimes painful when our buttons get pressed, you know, as they do all the time in the family. And like I was saying, every 5 minutes we are the Buddha leaving our castle of comfort. Comfort zone. Every 5 minutes, that's the place we need mindfulness. What is happening to me? What's pushing me out of my comfort zone? What does it feel like? What am I doing with it? How am I responding to it? And what's coming out of me to others? What am I saying, doing? What do I radiate? Mani Mishadeya? That's mindfulness. So it's a much more dynamic process than just watching the breath. It's like watching the stream of messages that are coming into me and out of me. And in some way or other in there, if we are mindful of those stream of messages, we are in control. And you say control is not exactly the right word. It's more like we're not drowned by them. We're not under them. We are with them. And the family life then takes on a different quality. The stream of messages are going around and around and around. They can make us pain, pleasure, whatever we might enjoy or not enjoy. Doesn't matter. The mindfulness is knowing and being awake to the stream of messages we're getting from our partners, from the eyes of our children, from ourselves, from what we need as parents. We often forget those messages. We're so busy listening to other people's messages, we forget the messages that are coming from here. So we ignore ourselves, those messages. So within this, mindfulness tells us about the family as a system, as a flow, as all the time messages coming, going, and we just dance in the middle of all that. I had a lot of discussions with my daughter, who's a CBT therapist, but she also does systemic therapy, especially with families. And it was really interesting to hear what she's learning what she learned in the university in London, and how she practices systemic therapy, which I didn't know much about. It's not my field. Systemic therapy as a psychologist, seeing the family as a system. And then in the system, what are the messages flowing backwards and forwards? And what do we do with these messages? And the way the Dharma would invite you is just to be mindful of this flow of messages. Just to be mindful. Okay, it's coming. This kid is telling me this. Pasada, I've got it. I'm telling that, you know, I'm hearing this. I've got it. Voices in me telling me what I need and who I am right now. I got it. I'm with it. That's all. It's just being very awake to this flow. And if you're awake to it, it doesn't drown you. And that's another major, I think, power that we have. And it helps us also to find responsibility. I mean, so while you're doing this retreat, I think many of you feel a real responsibility to find another way for the family, to find how to build a better world, to build to do something to kind of bring goodness. And that responsibility comes through mindfulness, the mindfulness of I am committed because I see. I don't want to sort of I'm stepping out of the, I don't know what you could call it, Ritalin generation or the whatever. I mean, it can be critical, but there's no point. You know, you all know what I mean. I like the responsibility is an English word to create the ability to respond. Yecholet lehanot, I think. To respond. That needs mindfulness. And that the family can be a field for that. As we build a new life for our children, we develop capacity to respond. That needs mindfulness, awakeness, to be there. Sometimes we need to be tough. It's okay. It's tough. It's all right. Tough with mindfulness. It's not a problem. Don Juan was in the Castaneda was talking about the guru, how sometimes your guru is your the most tough person that you have around you, and you need it sometimes. So, finally. I think perhaps the word that comes up is equanimity or steadiness. That we can't expect quiet in the family. We can't expect to retreat. We can't expect hours of quiet, you know, meditation. Or we often feel the silence is very difficult to find. But equanimity is not. Equanimity is not difficult. Equanimity is steadiness. Shivyon ishtavut nefesh, mashi kaze, yeah? Shivyon ishtavut nefesh. Anyway, it's like being steady in the middle of things. Ein hasera. The family is the family is like can be a bit of a storm. Ein hasera is the place to be in the middle of it and not running away from it. It's interesting. I had a nice discussion with Rachel, my wife, yesterday about this. That there is a concept in Kabbalah and also in the Dharma. That everything goes around, and in the middle is the tzir, and the tzir can be the hub of, in English you call it the hub of the wheel, like the place in the wheel where the wheel goes around, but there's one place which is still and empty. It's actually a hole, and in a way it's the empty place inside us. And in the Kabbalah, the Ein Sof is always inside. It's not outside, the Ein Sof Lamala. It's not, it's inside. And it's given and it's described as being the tzir. Inside us, this is the Ein Sof, where everything begins. Like nothing can really begin without that, because that needs to be created from a space. So the space inside is the tzir, or the empty space, even though we don't know it, and we don't notice what it is, and we don't recognize it. It's nevertheless there. You can call it Buddha nature, and it creates creativity, life, everything, spokes in the wheel. But the family is a little bit less model of a tzir and more of a model of Ein Hasera. Like you're still in the middle, but the tzir is not so empty, and it's not too kind of quiet, and it's much more in the middle. It's still similar model. The Ein Hasera is the eye in the middle of the it's not exactly tear, it's the eye, it's the seeing that we need in the middle of the storm. It's this sense that if we see things and we stay steady, then the storm goes round. And we stay steady, we stay equanimous, we stay balanced. And that's one of the greatest things in the family that we could have, the sense of being balanced. Because when things go crazy and turning around, and it's not just our fault, things are happening in life, it's maybe karma is happening, and samsara is happening, and all the influences are happening, and we can't protect ourselves from all the sort of society around, and the norms and the threats, and we can't protect ourselves from all that. We are open. So it's all coming in from outside as well as from inside. So we need to find a place like Eina Sera, and that's equanimity, steadiness, balance. We look, we see, and we stay steady. We know what's going on, we stay steady. We receive, we get pushed out of our Buddha castle of comfort, our Ezor Nochut, our comfort zone, get pushed out, but we stay steady, right in the middle of it all. And that's another power that transforms our family life. So thank you. That's what I wanted to say, a few words. We can just take a couple minutes of silence. We're going to have groups today. Every day there's at least two groups. So many of the questions that come from what I've been saying, from your own thoughts, we can bring up in the groups. We don't have a lot of time right now for questions. It's 11:15. And what's supposed to happen is a session of guidance in meditation, especially for beginners. So that's at 11:15 for 3/4 of an hour. So I'm happy to guide meditation practice, especially for beginners who've not had experience before. But let's just have a couple of minutes just quietly and sort of absorb what we've heard and just a little bit let it sink in, contemplate.